Welcome along to this week's episode of the Let's Get Run In podcast. How is the caramel kid? That's a very that's a tired intro from Jermaine. If this is your first show you've listened to, we've just come off the back of the big half, which was how we were entering the battle of the podcast. So we ran a half marathon over the weekend. It was tough going, eh, Jermaine? That wind, I've just come back from a 2-hour cycle, right? It's supposed to take me an hour in Amsterdam. It took me it didn't take that long, but I've got a headache. It's long. The wind just took it out, and it was even worse on Sunday at the big half in London. Whoa, Jesus. But anyway.
To be fair, on the course, it wasn't, it wasn't that bad on the course, but yeah, it was tough.
Yeah, didn't enjoy it. Anyway, we were going to talk a lot about the big half and the battle of the podcast after the interview, because we are got a big interview this week. We are talking to Tim Hutchins, who is the Eurosport commentator. Been the Eurosport commentator since 1989, and he commentates.
He's trying to recruit Sean.
He's trying to recruit me. I think I did too much stuttering for him to think I was a polished operator. But anyway, we're chatting to him mostly about the state of athletics, but also coming in the wake of the news about the Olympic qualifying standards. So if you haven't seen it, check out various top athletes' Twitter profiles and the controversy this new announcement has generated. So the headlines, really, from what I can see, but essentially most of the qualifying standards have gone down. So, for example, the marathon is now 2:11. So my chances of making the Olympics have gone from 0.0001 to 0.000000. So I ain't ever going to make it. Cause I'm not... And Jermaine, for you, 8:22 now, I think, for the steeplechase. So I think you now have to finally hang out those shoes and say Olympics is never going to be for you.
I might take my moped. I've probably get over the barriers on that.
So essentially, it's going to be very difficult for a lot of people. But that's the qualifying times, but there is a system of points. So you can get points for various competitions, including the Diamond League, which is obviously where you're going to get those quick races. And there's various
which is
points.
It's a bad system.
Well, we don't really know. It's complicated, and Tim's going to talk to us about it in a minute. So it's complicated. It's difficult to know how much it's going to affect athletes. Well, it's going to affect athletes, but how much it's going to change the sport. But they're certainly giving it a go.
Nothing affects the good runners, because the really top runners will run one race and easily run the standard. So it's not going to affect them. The people it's going to affect is the almost runners, you know, like the almost making it.
Okay.
Runners.
Yeah. The guys just under the.
And that's going to affect. So they're not making loads of money, and obviously they're on the cusp of getting the standard. They've obviously made the standard that much harder. And if you could only get into certain races to get the points to get into the Olympics, that makes it even harder, and obviously it's going to cost even more money because they've got to go to more places to get the points.
Yeah, so it's going to be, the importance of having a good agent has now become even more important. But anyway, we're going to talk a lot.
I guess because most pro athletes now, not the top ones, but most of them, represent themselves. This system will people be trying to get an agent because they know their agent can get them in now. So it's almost trying to bring back agents.
Do you think? Yeah. It's going to be interesting how it plays out, but I think we should go to Tim. Let's see what his take on it is first. But anything happening in your end, Jermaine?
Only rants. I've got bus rants, not a story. Bus rants.
Yeah. Well, let's listen to Tim and we'll tackle those bus rants afterwards. Here we go.
Okay.
So on this week's show, we're talking to Tim Hutchins. Tim's the Eurosport commentator since 1989 and a freelance commentator, races around the world. How are you doing, Tim?
I'm good, Sean. Thanks. I'm fine. In between weekend trips, I was in Rome on Sunday for a big half marathon, and I'm in New York this coming weekend for a big half marathon. But it's a very busy week. What were these announcements on the Diamond League and Olympic qualifying? So lots going on.
Yeah, an interesting time to be in the world of athletics.
Say again?
An interesting time to be in the world of athletics.
It is an interesting time. Yeah, you know, it's a pivotal period. And I think While everybody's venting their spleens on social media about the announcements yesterday by the IAAF on the Diamond League and one or two other issues, people have to remember that, you know, this sport of ours has been a historic, powerful, rich sport for many, many years, but it is in a bit of trouble. It's not attracting the sponsors it used to. It's not attracting the TV audiences it used to. And at ground level, in many countries that were traditionally strong athletics countries, it is struggling to retain its position, its popularity. So, you know, some radical decisions do need to be made, and there's always going to be pushback against those. So I guess the reactions we've seen over the last 24 hours since that IAAF announcement yesterday are to be expected.
Yeah, absolutely. And so looking back at you, if people haven't heard of you, they might have heard your voice, but because you're at the very top of the sports back in the early 80s. You started...
mid to late 80s, more than the early 80s. I was very lucky, like trying to put it all in a nutshell in 20 seconds or so. I was very lucky because in the 80s, if you were to be good in Britain, you had to be world class. You know, if you wanted to be making British squads, you had to be 1,500, 5,000. You had to be in the top four or five in the world. Yeah. So you were sort of dragged up by necessity. I was lucky. I ran in three or four Commonwealth Games, the World Championships, and the Olympics, and
more than that, Tim. You medaled twice at the Europeans and the Commonwealth Games too.
Yes, I did. Yeah, and I was fourth in the Olympics. But I do say occasionally when people are bothering to listen that I hold the world record for not winning anything. You know, I was second, third and fourth in everything, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And coming into this, but were you, because obviously you medaled twice at the World Cross, were you a track runner that ran cross-country to supplement his training, or were you a cross-country runner, a purist kind of at heart, and did the track in the summer because it was something else to do?
That's a very good question. I think in my mind, I was a track runner who did cross-country, but in practice, I was probably a very good cross-country runner who tried to be very good at track. Cross country came naturally to me. Yeah, I got a couple of silver medals in the World Cross, and each time was beaten by an Olympic champion or somebody who was just about to be an Olympic champion. And you know, so I suppose in objectively my performances in the country were much better. But the trouble is that when you win a lot of cross country races on the continent, in France and Italy and Spain and elsewhere through the winter months, those are fairly anonymous performances. They don't get seen on TV, and they're lost in the pages of history. Whereas when you do good things in the track, it's nearly always televised.
Yeah, yeah. And I was going to ask about cross-country, really, because I was going to say, obviously now we feel cross-country is a second, well, perhaps a second-class sport. You don't get any real attention on the cross-country championships even. Was it the same back when you were an athlete?
No. I think cross-country was very much to the fore with the media and in public awareness, but that was before the African Revolution of these last 25 years. Mm. You know, we were lucky. We weren't competing against literally hundreds of very, very naturally talented, hard training, well-organized Africans as the current generation are. So, you know, when I came second in the world cross country, maybe my fitness back then would have got me in the top 15 now, to be perfectly honest. One could never know, but it's a much, much tougher stage now for a variety of reasons. It does annoy me that cross-country has been so badly mishandled by past managers of the IAAF. You know, in other words, when they introduced the middle-distance race at the World Cross Country, the short race, you know, that was to try and attract the middle-distance stars. Well, it was always a dilution of what was already a very powerful race that probably needed a bit of tinkering. Mm. Under DIAC, there was a disastrous reign of in terms of cross country, because it went off to venues that were relatively insignificant, that weren't in the media spotlight, that were hard to get to for the European countries and many other countries. Yeah. And as a result, cross country has declined dramatically. It's now only every 2 years. It's totally dominated by the Africans, and somebody needs to do something to try and change that up, because the bottom line, even if people don't like it because it's not politically correct, the bottom line is that, you know, Western audiences, the audiences and the markets that pay the bills are not enthralled by seeing 25 Africans charging around at the front of the field with the best Australians and Americans behind them.
No, that's very true. If you were, I was thinking about, you know, Britain being so strong when you were during your period of competition. If you were It's a really hard question to answer as a off the cuff, but if you were put in charge, if you were able to have a say in returning Britain to those potentially attempting to address this deficit to the Africans, is there anything you would do? Do you think anything you would do or instigate to try and bridge that gap?
Yeah, well, I think first of all it'll be very interesting to see what happens in Aarhus in Denmark in 2 or 3 weeks' time, because there's some quite significant innovations been introduced there. You know, it's a 2,000-meter lap, which is great for spectators. It's a short lap. You know, there's the cheering tent for spectators. There's, as I understand it, there's hardly a flat meter or circuit. It's going to be very, very undulating and twisting and turning. And
right.
I think it makes different demands to the very flat, fast courses that became the norm under Nebbiolo and Ziyech. And that was a real shame because it favoured the physiology, I think, of many of the top African runners. So in Aarhus, I still expect the Africans to dominate, but I'm hoping that there will be a lot of more of the rest of the world close up behind them.
Mm.
If that doesn't turn out to be the case, if the adjustments are not sufficient to create more of a balance and therefore more of a marketable product,
yeah,
then one thing I have sort of tongue-in-cheek muted over recent years is that they should be A and B races.
Right.
And if you look at the results of the last 10 or 15 World Cross countries and where the Europeans finish, where the European teams finish, that can be justified because it has become, I'm afraid, far too much of an event that is utterly dominated by the Africans, frankly. And yeah. Without putting too fine a point on it, that has bored the floating voter TV audience who have got the TV controls in their hands and who can flip over straight away if they want to. And we've lost huge support because there is no... People want to see Americans and Europeans and Australians and South Americans and Japanese athletes challenging. They don't want to see their own people getting thrashed year after year after year. That's just not... You know, it's not Grand Slam tennis. It doesn't work in the same way. So you've got to take that into account.
Yeah. Can is there anything that, it's hard to sort of say the Africans need to do this, but is there anything they can do, you think, the athletes themselves to try and perhaps make themselves more relatable in terms of the audience at the moment?
Well, I think you know, obviously you've got people on social media who are doing a great job of promoting themselves, and if they're a big name successful star, then that is a real boost for the sport. I mean, athletes are very aware nowadays of marketing pressures, of marketing skills and techniques, and they do all they can from a practical point of view in terms of training. You know, obviously you've got your Julian Wonderses and the Kiwi twins, the Robertsons, and various other people going out to Kenya and living there and embedding themselves in Kenyan culture or Ethiopian culture and giving everything and actually producing results. But you've got to be realistic. You cannot expect hundreds and hundreds of athletes from all over the world to go and live in Kenya or go and live in Ethiopia and dedicate such a big slab of their lives and change their lives in such a dramatic way. So while it's worked for a small number of guys whose names, frankly, you could count on the fingers of one hand, that is not a realistic answer to being able to match the Africans, I'm afraid. It is a real dilemma because, you know, they are incredibly gifted athletes, the Africans. They train very hard. They're very well organized now in their coaching setups and camps. Mm. And frankly, they are light years ahead of the rest of the world in ability. So it is a real conundrum. I'm not quite sure if there is one simple answer, but I do think that people would support, for example, I don't want to call it a B race, but a second race in the World Cross Country where you've got Europe against the USA, against Australia, or against, well, the rest of the world, bar the guys who are going to get around a 10K circuit 30, 40, 50 seconds quicker, and I'm mostly talking about the East Africans, of course.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything wrong with seeing a race that would be compelling, but just doesn't have 20 guys from East Africa 1 minute ahead after 7K.
Yeah, and we've seen with, not necessarily cross country, but the last two, the European Indoors last weekend and the European Championships last summer, it's exciting, interesting racing at European Championships. How do you feel about those events? Are they, Do you think they're getting those right now, the European Championship?
Yes, I do. And actually, that's a very good case in point, sort of linked to what I was saying just now. You know, you've got people winning a women's 800 in 202, and you've got a number of races being won in times that years ago, now thanks to the nailing down of all the drug cheats, would have been scoffed at, wouldn't have got people out of the semi-finals.
Yeah.
You know, they're winning titles with performances that look historically second rate, but they're not. They're clean performances, which is a novelty. And the races are absolutely engrossing. You know, there's some fabulous racing in Glasgow. In many disciplines, the standards were very, very high. But in many races, the times weren't particularly quick. And yet the races were fantastic. So when there's medals up for grabs and national vests on people's backs and you've got genuine competition, then there's an awful lot of mileage in that sort of format.
Yeah. And were you there at Glasgow? Did you watch Laura perform?
No, I wasn't. I was doing it for Eurosport. I'd whisper this, but from a studio in London.
Yeah, letting us behind the curtain.
And I, as you can imagine, I was just a tad frustrated when the entire world of athletics was in Glasgow.
Yeah. But exciting. It's great to see her sort of making that step up. Do you think she has sort of put herself in a position now where she can compete with Hassan and Dibaba for the World Championship this summer?
Yeah, well, she definitely has. I think we've got to keep a lid on our enthusiasm because this was the European Championships. And frankly, without the doped up Russians and various other doped up athletes competing, she is in a different class to most of the rest of Europe. You know, Hassan was not there, for example. She would have made it a lot more competitive. But clearly, Laura is in the top two or three in the world at 1500/3000. It's just, you know, come Doha in the autumn or in September, October, come Tokyo in August next year, things can be very different. You know, you're going to have people who have focused on those. They haven't got caught up with the indoor circuit. They haven't got caught up so strongly with their continental championships. And, you know, I feel as though we big Laura up every time at a global championship. And then she comes down with a bang when it comes to reality. And that was the case in Rio and it was the case in London 2017. And I think we should be sort of keeping our enthusiasms a little more bottled up and let Laura's legs do the talking for her.
Yeah, absolutely. And did you see anyone else over the obviously you're traveling around, you're going to you said Rome last weekend, have you seen any performances over the last sort of 12 months that bode well for both maybe on the road or perhaps on the track, people for breakthrough runners coming through this year?
That's an interesting one. That's a difficult one. I mean, you know, the breakthrough runners, of course, on a domestic/European level, like Millie Courtney or some of our 1500 lads have had a fantastic winter. But on a global level, who can actually compete? I mean, you know, Dina Asher-Smith, obviously, it'd be fantastic to see her have another good summer and get medals in Doha. I think Dina's got, you know, a lot of improvement to come. What is she? She's only 22 or 23, isn't she?
Yeah,
and she's
incredible.
Running 10:98 or whatever. Hard to say, really. I mean, you know, I think that if you look at the middle and long distance scene, there is such a mass of talent coming out of East Africa year after year, new names appearing, that it's incredibly hard for the top non-Africans to really compete. You know, the USA has got some big talents and big names, but nobody who really looks like they're going to take it to the Africans that comes to mind.
Yeah. It was interesting a couple of years. I think maybe it was London or it was Rio, but that they, looking at the medals won at the middle distance events, the Americans started to come back and win a few medals and started to supply. It looked like money was starting to make a resurgence, if you know, money athletes from richer countries started to come back and win medals. But it doesn't look like that's going to become a trend, really, does it?
Well, you know, you've got to look at the USA, where you've got 330 million people or whatever, and a massive amount of money, fabulous resources, and you've got these great big groups sponsored by the different shoe companies where great coaching and great things are going on and they are producing results. You know, Matt Centrowitz winning in Rio and the 1500, and you've got Nick Simmons winning a medal back in Moscow 2013, I think. And there's a few guys who come through and get medals, but you know, the resources that the USA are able to throw at it are so incredible. They're massively disproportionate to the amount of money, let's say, that's pumped into the top East Africans per capita. And UK and Europe can't possibly hope to match that sort of support for the top talent. So yeah, if you throw enough resources at something, you will get a few heads sticking, being stuck up over the parapet and producing good results. But it's very hard-won progress, and I don't think there's necessarily any trend in that respect. And then you get freakish little groupings like the Ingebrigtsens, you know, family grouping coming out of Norway, who are just they're a breath of fresh air for the sport. I mean, they are fantastic. Mm. They are super talented, even by African standards, and they I think can get medals over this next 4 or 5 years at global level. But again, that is a freak situation. That probably comes along once every 100 years. Somebody like Jakob Ingebrigtsen.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can't really talk about the future in the summer without addressing the standards, the controversy that's happened in the last couple of days, and the changes to the Diamond Leagues. Put it simply, what's happened? Can you give us kind of a little synopsis? It might be a difficult thing to do in a couple of minutes, but what's the changes that have put into place?
I think they're trying to make the sport more democratic. They're trying to make sure that more of the best athletes get a shot at making championship teams. Hmm. In terms of the Diamond League, obviously the IAAF are one of the main sponsors of the Diamond League, and therefore they rightly should have some control over it, or a big say in what's organised. I mean, the announcements made yesterday were news to me, even though I'm a Diamond League commentator. And I'm holding my tongue at the moment as to what is the reasoning behind some of those decisions. I mean, as the next 5,000 meter man, it would be a bit bizarre if I didn't say I'm disappointed that the 5,000 seems to have been locked out of the Diamond League. And funnily enough, we've got a Diamond League meeting here in Brighton today, on the south coast of the UK, where I shall be asking that question. The only problem is, of course, that the changes were announced as a fait accompli yesterday by the IAAF. That it's not like these are being discussed. And a lot of people are able to weigh in. So I'm disappointed to have heard the news of changes after they've been decided, rather than actually having some input. But I'm sure they've got their reasons for that. So, yeah, and change is always going to be controversial. You know, people hate change. There are a lot of people who love the tradition of athletics. But this is the 21st century. Sponsors are hard to come by. TV viewing figures are going down. By and large, and some really radical decisions do need to be made. Mm. And time will tell as to whether or not they've got those decisions right.
Yeah. And in terms of the standard, because I think a lot of people have come out and said people aren't reading the changes properly, and the standards are being lowered, but it doesn't necessarily mean things are going to completely change in terms of Olympic qualification. Do you think it's going to be harder now, particularly for the 5K, 10K runners who are looking to run fast races in order to get these points to compete? Do you think it's going to be really hard, unless you've got a great agent, to find good races to run into, to run these times and qualify for the games?
Well, that's what a lot of people are saying, is that, you know, it's now about who you know and the agent, what agent you've got. And that, again, I'd need to chat to more people about it, because I didn't have any time yesterday to do this, about whether or not there is real validity to those sort of comments. I do think that, for example, at 5,000, that the standard 13:13 is an Olympic qualifying is outrageously hard, and the women's is outrageously soft in comparison at 15:10. I mean, for me, there's a gulf between those two times, so I don't quite understand that. But as I say, I need to get more genned up on the nuances of the qualification times and the qualification system that is being imposed before I can make further comment. And it would be unwise of me to do so anyway without having spoken to the people who really, really matter in the sport.
Yeah, absolutely. And just sort of thinking about the situation with athletics, I mean, you're seeing obviously the viewing figures are dropping, the sponsors are dropping. Do you think controversies like this, and also the testosterone debate with the Semenya case and things, are these helpful in terms of the profile of athletics, do you think? Or are in fact, does it look like it's a complete mess and we're not going anywhere?
Well, I mean, first of all, you know, I think people have got to acknowledge that Seb has spent 4 years firefighting and battling the whole Russian doping scandal and trying to get a whole load of things sorted out that Diak left behind. You know, the sport after the Diak reign was left in an utter mess in many respects, and the scandals coming out have been so shocking and disappointing. It sickens me, and many other people have been in the sport for many, many years. Seb, I think, now wants to start focusing on some positives and making adjustments to take the sport forward. But, you know, the whole doping scandal is being dealt with, and that has damaged the sport immeasurably. In terms of the testosterone thing and the whole Caster Semenya debate, I've got very strong views on that. And again, I need to sort of hold my tongue to some degree. But I do think that the women's 800 metres at championship level, global championship level in recent years, has become rather farcical. And, you know, there are some people out there on social media making very, very good points about why there has to be a differentiation between women who have absolutely normal testosterone levels and women who don't. And, you know, when you've got 13-year-olds running times faster than the Olympic champion at 800 metres and people try and say, well, actually, testosterone is not a factor, then it just beggars belief. I'm very, very frustrated by the amount of support behind that, the argument to allow anybody to race as they were born. You know, we have a thing called the para sport for people who are not born with everything working in order, or people who have had accidents and whose bodies are not 100%. And that is because their performances are subpar. And so they perform in para sport, and it's remarkable and very admirable what they do. But it seems that once you've established there's a lower parameter for performances, why shouldn't there be an upper parameter where above which super talented or super gifted athletes have to compete? There should be a category for them. It's nothing that they've done wrong, but once you establish that there are categories outside of the norm, i.e. para sport, then why can't there be an upper category outside of the norm?
Right. Okay. Makes sense. And but do you think that's ever going to happen? Do you think that's being considered, or is that, you know, a step too far? We have to wait and see.
I think it's time it has to be. I mean, you know, in race after race now, I go to events where I see women competing and I have to look at them with a squint. And more often than not, their performances match some slightly strange looking physical aspects. And you know, it's a very, very delicate subject, but there is clearly a job to be done in tidying up that side of the sport, and the resistance to it is doing nothing but holding back the sport.
And like you say, we were talking earlier about having the A and the B race, for a viewer's perspective, to not have faith in what's going on and not see it as a fair race, does you lose trust in what you're seeing. So,
I mean, you know, A and B races in the world cross country is one thing. I'm not sure I'd want A and B races in any other context.
No, absolutely. Okay. And obviously being from the side of the media, but also having been a top athlete yourself, is there anything the media could be doing to improve the sport as a product? Like, here in the UK, football does supersede everything, and then in BBC Five Live is wall to wall football, and most sports channels, Sky Sports, is football. You know, all the time you get the national cross country. It's not even shown live on national TV. Do you think the media could be doing anything more to put the product in front of people, or should be improving the product and then sort of looking to push it out?
Well, the trouble is there are so many different levels of the sport. I mean, I think, you know, this is why the IAAF are trying to make these adjustments to make sure it's relevant and worthy of being televised. So, you know, when it comes to national cross country, I mean, is there any national cross country championship in the world that is televised? You know, there are different levels of the sport, below which, and some of which are quite low down, even national championships like you're mentioning, or, you know, regional or club athletics. You can't expect those to be televised or to get wide media coverage. But what I do think is that we've got to protect the crown jewels, and that is the grouping of events on track, road and country that are currently televised, and make sure we don't lose any ground on those.
Right.
I think maybe we've become rather arrogant in athletics and become rather blasé about the amount of TV coverage we get. The sport gets massive TV coverage compared with swimming and rowing and so many other disciplines that are Olympic sports. And we've got to fight hard to hold that ground, because other sports are doing a great job in marketing themselves and trying to steal some of that TV coverage.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I better not leave you to take much more of your time. You've obviously got a busy day with the Diamond League meeting, but we have three questions we ask every interviewee on the show. And they are, if you could be running anywhere in the world now, where would it be?
If I could be running anywhere in the world now, where would it be? Yeah. It would be in the Waitakere's, the hills outside Auckland, which are just beautiful. It's where John Walker did a lot of his hard training. They're forested, semi-tropical, and just glorious views and atmosphere and flora and fauna. Yeah, nice 2-hour run through there, gliding along, stopping, drinking out of the natural springs that come down the hillsides, like some of the great New Zealand runners used to do in decades gone by. That would be a nice way to spend an afternoon.
Beautiful. And the second question is, can you recommend us something? So that could be a book, film, TV show, whatever, anything like that, a physical thing, or it could be an experience you think our listeners should check out.
No problem there. I would say if you haven't read it, get hold of a copy of Unbroken.
Okay.
The movie came out about 4 years ago. The book is 10 times better than the movie. True story. And just a staggering account of endurance and Olympic competition.
Okay, Unbroken. And the third question is maybe a tough one. In your opinion, what's the greatest endurance performance of all time?
Wow. The greatest endurance performance or race? Greatest race, I think, was that Olympic 10,000 in Sydney between Haile and Gebrselassie and Paul Turgat. Greatest performance of all time. Very, very tough one. Is it Eliud Kipchoge in Berlin last September? Is it Paula Radcliffe's world record of 2:15 back in 2003? Is there another one that sort of, for various reasons, it deserves a lot more respect?
Very tough.
I have to say that one's being thought about. Thought about. So I'll go with those two, Paula and Eliud.
Perfect. Excellent. Well, have a good day. Good luck with the meeting. Hope things are on it and you can get your head around all the changes and perhaps summarise them all on Twitter. People can catch you, your opinions there. Is that right?
They can, exactly. Yeah, Tim Hutchings won. I do have a tweet and a little vent my spleen occasionally. I try to be diplomatic, so forgive me if occasionally I say something wrong. that goes for electronic media as well. There's no forgiveness in working in TV and radio. Once you've said it, it's out there. I wish I was a writer and you could spend many minutes, if not hours, thinking about what you're going to say.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, good luck today. Have a good day in Brighton.
Thanks a lot, Sean. Okay, take care.
So nice interview there from Tim, some things to think about. Certainly going to be an interesting couple of years for the sport of athletics, and it's going to be fun seeing how this all plays out. But bus rants, man. What's this about bus rants? What's been going on?
Well, I've been doing a lot of the X68.
Yeah.
So if someone said to you...
Hang on, what the hell does that mean?
So it's like the 68, say if it's like a number bus route, goes from so-and-so to so-and-so. And if it's got an X on the front of it, what would you think that means?
It's a naughty bus. It's got naughty. It could do naughty things.
It's an express, and it only stops at maybe one quarter of the stops.
Okay, all right, yeah, it makes sense then. Yeah,
So the first three stops, it picks the people up, and it skips nearly all the stops, and then just drops the people off on the last three stops. Right?
Yeah. Okay.
And the people are so, they make so much complaints. If someone gets on and says, "Oh, I made a mistake, can you let me off?"
Yeah.
And you think, okay, there's no point in me driving you all the way across London knowing that you want to get off. You just let them off. But if you do that, passengers will complain.
Oh, no, because it wants to be express.
Yeah, and they say, "Oh, you're making our journey slower. The driver's not doing his job properly." So, like, I've had loads of complaints for leaving 15 seconds early. You know, so it's great. So I'm obviously driving loads of occasions. I'm driving, and you get past Waterloo, and then obviously the bus doesn't go the same way the normal route goes. It takes a shorter version, like a shorter route.
Yeah.
And then you always get someone come up to you and go, "Oh, this going so and so." I'm like, "Yeah," but then they go, "Oh, but it doesn't go through Camberwell." I'm like, "No." They say, "Oh, I need to get off," and I says, "Well, the first stop is is Norwood Junction. Yeah. They'd go, no. And then, so the men, usually if it's a guy, they would just try and let themselves out, which is fine because I'm not in control.
Yeah.
But the women make me laugh because the women, they put on like their pillow talk voice. Oh, I made a mistake. Can you let me out?
Yeah.
And in my head, I'm just thinking of the people with their notepad ready to make their complaint. Yeah. So I look at them and say, no.
Yeah.
But it's like they go, well, I thought this was the, they go, what bus is this? I said, it's the X68. I said, the X stands for Express. You know, like, almost trying to wind them up. But it's like people, one woman rushed to get the bus. She got on the bus. And then she goes, oh, what bus is this? I'm like, well, you just jump on the bus and think, oh, that's the one you need.
So people of London, get your buses right. Jermaine's going to be upset. Just read the signs, get there on time. You ain't gonna stop a plane from going, are you, Jermaine? You're not going to stop a plane.
Well, that's what I said. You don't jump on a train and go, well, where does this go after the doors are closed?
Bus ran over. But back to the more important issue at hand, the big half. How's your legs feeling now?
Bad.
Well, let's explain to everyone what happened. So essentially, we are doing a Battle of the Podcast. We are running a half marathon in March. It's still open to do it. So if you want to sort of compete for Let's Get Running, all you've got to do is do a half marathon in March and on the Strava, join the Strava group, Battle of the Podcast on Strava. We'll put you a link on our show notes. Let's Get Running /podcast. Lots of stuff to explain there. However, if you do that, just run a half marathon on your Strava comments or your title of your Strava run, just put half marathon for Let's Get Running and the time, the official time on there. And that will enter you in that competition, which would be really good. But we did it. So we both ran. Jermaine, what was your time in the end?
81:21.
Which is all right, man. You haven't run more than an hour and 15 in how many years?
Well, like you said, like Sean pointed out to me, he says, you've only been doing 20 miles a week. He says, why are you complaining?
almost as much in one run as you've done in most of your weekly mileages for the past 6 months. But, you can't be complaining, so hey.
For me, it's funny because my coach came to watch and he says, oh, the first mile, you're a bit too far up there, but he said you look really easy. Yeah. So I saw people from my old club,
yeah,
and they were all going for 70, 75. And I was thinking, oh, maybe I could win that. Because yeah. I said my target was 80.
Yeah.
So I said, maybe. And I knew they're good on the time. So they set off. They set off and they're steady.
Yeah.
So I was just behind them. And it felt like I was running so slow. I was like, come on. I was thinking, lucky I started with these because I would have run even faster.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, it's so slow. My coach goes, oh, you was like brushing dust off your shoulders, waving at everyone. And I was like, yeah, it was easy. And he says, when we came back round after mile five,
yeah,
I wanted to drop out. At least I laughed because he said, you still got like 10 miles, you know, you have 9 miles left. I was like, shit.
But you struggled through, right? Have you looked at your splits? Have you seen how much a bigger drop off you had?
So when he said he saw me at 5 mile, I was about 30 minutes.
Okay.
So I actually only slowed down 3 minutes,
okay,
in the, you know, like the last, you know, yeah, rest of it.
Yeah. Okay.
Last 8 miles, well.
And did you get overtaken?
That's actually quite even, but this is the problem.
Yeah.
It was more mentally tough than physically.
Right. Okay.
Cause I had people going past me, and these are like, I'm talking old. I had women, short, fat people and like, ogres, these big old people. I was like, man, mentally, it was embarrassing. I was like, man, what's going on? And to rub salt in the wound, some guy went past me with a backpack. I had people with awful running. It was so bad. I was like, man, these people can't run past me. And I was thinking, oh, when it comes to long distance,
yeah,
you don't really need talent.
No.
You just need training.
Yeah, and determination. That's what I've been getting by in all these years, Jermaine. That's all I've got.
I saw you at Canary Wharf. We had to do a loop around at Canary Wharf.
Oh,
and right. I saw you running with a guy who had his arm in a sling.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, he was a good lad. I want to interview him. It was interesting running with him. It was really interesting. He got me. He beat me in the end. But he's a Scottish guy. He's a Paralympian.
Okay.
His name's Derek Ray, and we were running together like from the most of the race, really. It's quite interesting. And he was really good. Like, we come to all the windy sections, and he was so good. He was way better than I was. And I think he's a Scottish fella, and I think he was just much tougher than me. But he kept, whenever we were into the windy, we're like, let's pick it up, let's get on the back of this group in front. And it's like, oh my God, we're only at 5 miles. And he was pushing on, and he was catching up, and it was, oh no. So basically, I pushed too hard in the windy sections. So I think from about mile 3 to about mile 8, it was fairly windy. But then from that point, then you were down into with the wind behind you. So, but this guy was tough, and he was quicker, to be fair, than I was in the wind. So he was pushing on, and I was trying to hang on, and we were trying to work together. But it bust me. But it was tough. But he was really, it was funny, interesting guy. But it was quite, we were chatting as we were going around, because like, whenever we ran together, you just get so many people going, oh, wow. Like, to this guy, because obviously he's running with one arm. And I said to him, do you know what?
Well, he had two arms, but one was just in a sling.
Yeah, okay. But I think he's unable to use that arm. So he's a Paralympian. And I said to him, like, at what point does it go from, like, it might be encouraging to start with, do you know what I mean? Then I'm going, look, that guy's got one arm, he's running really fast. But there comes a point when it's like, a bit patronising, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, another person thinking I'm some kind of weirdo running with his arm. Like, it was a thin line, and I think he said he had to block out and not listen to it after a while. But hey, it was interesting.
Because when I saw it, I just thought he'd broke his arm, and he's like, I'm in good shape, because he looked like in great shape. No. And I thought this guy has broke his arm, and he's determined to do the race. And when I saw him rocking with you, I was like, oh boy, he is flying.
He beat me. He ran 69:30-ish, I reckon. Because I ran 69:41, and he basically, I think he was a motorcyclist, and he had an accident. I'm just looking at this now. Yeah, he had a brush with an articulated refrigerator truck. Sheesh. So his right arm is rendered useless. So
okay.
Amazing. Like, he was going pretty well, and he's a tough fellow. He's a really tough fellow. I thought if you've been through something like that, you'd be even tougher. So yeah, it's nice to run with him. But I was pleased, right? Because you know, sometimes when I'd had one of those weeks where I'd just been rushing around everywhere, had loads of work meetings in London, and Greta was moved over from, you know, to a different bed, and things are like, were just hectic, and she didn't sleep. So I basically didn't get any sleep, didn't do hardly, like, not enough running, really. And what running I did with a massive rucksack. So I was, you know, I'm one of those people, Jermaine, when it goes bad, I feel sorry for myself. Do you know what I mean? I get the violins out. So I was pleased. The violins were coming out about mile 5, and thinking, "Oh, it's all gone wrong. It's all, you know, it's going down the pan," and it didn't go down the pan, right? So I held it together, and I didn't completely die. And given I had such a shit week, and was so knackered in the morning of it, and I'm pleased that I managed to get through.
What did you think of the course?
I didn't think much of it. Yeah, I was thinking. I don't think,
because on the way out was all right, but going through the tunnel, it was roasting hot in there, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Going through the Lionhouse Link Tunnel.
Yeah.
And then when we turned round at Canary Wharf, obviously it was coming back into the wind.
Yeah.
But because it was so twisty, we didn't really hit the wind head on.
No.
But, like, so it was twisty. And also there was loads of cobbled roads and stuff.
Yeah.
And it said, runners stay on the road. And all the runners are just bombing on the pavement. I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, mile 5 is when you come up the little turning and turn back just to go onto Tower Bridge.
Yeah, yeah.
So that it's by the Royal Mint. So that was mile 5. And all of that, so you think once you go over Tower Bridge, going down Jamaica Road to Rotherhithe Tunnel, it was all downhill and it's super straight.
Yeah.
So I think everyone got a second wind, because even I felt like I was flying. I was like, yeah.
The wind got behind it. Yeah, it was. I don't think it was that good. I think it was all right. I don't think it's that quick. Do you think it's quick?
I don't know, because that was that's the first and last I'm doing.
Jermaine's already hung up his boots. He's had one go at half marathon. He's already hung up his boots. But I think
the way I feel, I'm walking down. So when people tell me, oh, they've done the marathon and their leg, they can't walk down the stairs, and you know all that stuff.
Yeah,
that's how I feel. I think I've only done a half. I don't think I've done a half. So I know what it feels like when track second sprinter as cross country. it's like them doing a map.
So you're taking a week off now, yeah, to relax, or perhaps a lifetime.
Today I can only walk down the stairs sideways. But yesterday I had to use my arms and the banisters to pop myself down. So that's that. My quads are gone.
But it was a good race in terms of the front. I think Dewey Griffiths ran pretty well, didn't he? I think he was first non, well, other than Mo, well, yeah, other than Mo, he was the first non-African. I think he was second on the GB list. I think he ran pretty well. There was Mo obviously won it. He beat Bashir. Carry on.
Apparently, loads of people said Mo was holding his stomach and stuff.
Oh, really? All right. Yeah, it wasn't that quick for him. He was 61.30 odd or something, I think. So it wasn't particularly...
Yeah, but that probably comes down to conditions. Yeah, exactly. Like you said, it was windy.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, interesting. Yeah, the guy he beat, is it Bashir Abdi from Belgium?
His training partner.
Yeah, yeah. Somalian guy, yeah. So, I mean, he's a pretty good runner too. So, like, you know, he did pretty well. But, yeah, interesting. Wilson Kipsang was in form, I think, wasn't he?
I would say he probably let Mo be in because Mo pays him to be his training partner.
Oh, does he?
So he probably let us say, well, I better not be the boss. I don't want to piss him off, you know.
Yeah. Nice. I think, Jermaine, I haven't caught up with Greg yet, but I think in terms of hosts' times, we've put a pretty good marker down.
Because you reckoned, well, I just needed to run sub-90.
Yeah. And you got
and we're good.
Yeah, we're good. We did it. It was good. I'm glad we did it. It's made me think about whether I can be bothered to run London Marathon again. Just because when you're hurting through a half marathon, you think, can I really be bothered with this anymore? So I'm not sure.
To do the marathon
this April. Yeah. But I'm going to have a think about it over the next few days. And I may decide not to do it. But hey, we'll see. We'll come back to it. But hey. But anyway, I should let you... Carry on.
And then what about the other categories?
Well, we can't top that up until the end of March, but I know we've got a few good runners who've declared for us. I think Andy Maud, my friend Andy, he ran in the Surrey half yesterday and ran 67 minutes. So we've got some really good runners coming in for us. And I'm sure I haven't checked the Scriver group yet today, but there's going to be lots of guys there hopefully declaring for us who ran the big half. A few guys that we coach at Let's Get Running, ran pretty well. So hopefully... we will have some big numbers put in there. So if you are running a half marathon, don't forget to add it to the Strava group. All you've got to do is run it, be part of the Strava group, and change the title, and you will be entered for us to see if we can win. Get out there and do it, I reckon. Sounds good.
And then if we do another challenge, it's got to be less than half marathon, or it's got to be something obscure like obstacle courses, something different.
I'd like to see me and Jermaine in a two-man kayak. Well, that's what I reckon.
Who's
going
to be the must? Someone's got to be the steerer. The other person's got to be the power.
Yeah. I think, looking at the weight you piled on since retirement, Jamie, and you're definitely on the power.
But then I don't want to be powered away and you're steering us around in circles.
I think we've got some practicing to do, but hey. So review time. Review time. We've got not one, not two, not three, but four reviews, Jermaine. Four reviews.
That's making up for the weeks that we were, you know, like when it was bad.
Yeah, when it was bad. Here we go. There's four here. I'm going to read through them. Number one, by Alison Walker Runner. Thanks, Alison Walker Runner. She says, "The most balanced running podcast!" Exclamation mark. Such a light-hearted podcast with great interviews with athletes covering various distances. Balanced views and great knowledge shared. Very motivational and good tips for the amateur athlete. Keep up the good work, guys. Exclamation mark. Bus stories are also three emojis, all of them thumbs up. So thanks, Alison. That's a five-star.
They're almost better than the running, yeah?
They're almost better. We love an emoji. We love a review. Keep them coming in. Here's another one from Andy Hebb. Thanks, Andy Hebb. He says five stars. He goes, buzzing podcast. I like it. Great company on recovery runs, although you do get some funny looks by passers-by as you run along laughing to yourself, listen to the lad's antics and banter. Jermaine loves an antic. He loves a banter. He's in there with both. Next one, brilliant exclamation mark. Five stars by Jody Fisk. Great podcast, great guests. Always gives me a laugh on my commute to work. Even some half-decent running advice. Like she's given the emoji. You know the emoji that has the teeth, like the bearing the teeth like...
Yeah, the shiny teeth, yeah.
No, it's more like... It's not really sure, but kind of, you know, do you know what I mean? Making a joke. So that was a good one. I love an emoji. My computer's run out. Do you know what? My computer's just run out of gas. And I can't read the math.
Schoolboy.
Schoolboy.
You better charge out right, you better charge out right now.
Yeah. Sorry, everybody. That's my fault. I'm going to have to get that read out loud next week. So two more. There was a review and a half to read out, but we will attack that next week and read it out. Thanks very much for those guys. Thanks. Keep them coming in.
Sean will send a discount for his T-shirt.
I'll send you a discount code for not reading out your review. Yeah, yeah. It's been one of them days. It's been one of those. I'm only just back to Amsterdam, so I'm just sorting myself out, and the damn iPad ran out of battery. Anyway, we should let everyone go.
All right, see you later. Bye.
Bye-bye.